You start with bare ground and no clear plan. The space looks simple, but you learn fast that every patch of soil has a history, and every mistake will cost time you do not get back. You feel the pressure before you lift a tool. Sunlight cuts across the area in uneven stripes. Shadows move in ways you did not expect. Wind punches through gaps you never noticed. Water pools where it should not. You realize the ground is already telling you what it can handle and what it will fight. If you choose wrong, the work will bury you later. You slow down and look closer. You check slope, drainage, and soil texture. You watch how the light shifts. You listen to the way the ground holds moisture. You read signs you never paid attention to before. This is where the first real decision is made. Pick the right ground, and the garden stands a chance. Pick wrong, and you will spend the season fixing avoidable problems. Chapter 1, The Ground You Stand On. You start with the land, because the land decides everything that follows. You work slow at first. You walk the area in long lines and short cuts. You look for signs of trouble. You look for signs of strength. You keep your eyes on sunlight, drainage, wind, slope, and soil. You learn how these forces hit the ground during the long months ahead. You stand still and watch the sun move. You take note of how morning light hits the space. You check how long it stays. You check again during the middle of the day, when heat becomes a different kind of pressure. You finish with late light as it stretches across the area. You need 6 hours of clean sun for most crops. You need to track if buildings, fences, or trees cut into that requirement. You read the shadow lines. You study how they drift and tighten. You learn which parts of the land stay bright and which fall into dark pockets that will never warm. You move to drainage next. You wait for a day when the ground still holds moisture. You step lightly and then harder. You check if the soil sinks or stays steady. You look for puddling, even small signs of it. You find the spots where water gathers. You find the lines where runoff travels. You note areas that dry too fast because they lose moisture to wind or harsh sun. You decide which of these risks matters most to your long-term plan. You understand that poor drainage is not a small issue. It brings rot, weak roots, pests, and failed growth. Fixing it later costs energy you cannot spare. You shift your focus to wind. You look for gaps between structures that funnel strong gusts. You look at exposed corners that will rip heat from the soil and damage young plants. You pay attention to tall objects that create swirling currents. You understand that wind breaks can be built, but only if you know where the pressure comes from. You stand in the open and feel how air moves across the space. You take note when the wind shifts direction. You take note of how it changes speed. You understand that wind shapes growth patterns as much as sunlight. You step along the slope of the land. You study how the ground rises or dips. You learn how even a mild incline can alter water flow and soil stability. You check for erosion scars. You check for loose earth. You check for tight, compacted ground that refuses to breathe. You note where soil feels soft and where it feels heavy. You decide which parts can support the weight of beds, pathways, and tools. You also mark the spots that are too unstable to build on. You crouch down and lift a handful of soil. You work it between your fingers. You take note of texture. You look for grit, clay, silt, or a mix. You smell for signs of rot or chemical presence. You scan for debris. You understand that healthy soil has structure. You understand that poor soil can be repaired, but not if it is contaminated or built on decades of neglect. You scan for glass, metal, or other hazards. You watch for runoff channels that may carry pollutants from roads or old structures. You check if neighboring areas feed water into your chosen patch. You want land that drains clean and does not pull in trouble from outside sources. You search for microclimates. You stand near walls and fences. You check how heat builds on their surfaces. You check how cold settles near them. You observe how shade moves under trees. You note warmer corners that may extend the growing season by a few days. You find cooler areas that may delay growth. You learn how to use these conditions instead of fighting them. You understand that microclimates decide what thrives where. You finish with water access. You trace how far a hose must reach. You check the distance between your source and the potential garden footprint. You calculate the labor it takes to move water during long weeks of heat. You check for stable water pressure. You check for the reliability of the source. You do not build a garden that forces you to haul water across long distances. You pick ground that works with you. You step back and look at the entire space again. You read the land like a map with layers. You see where sunlight supports growth. You see where water gathers. You see where wind hits hard. You see where soil carries strength. You see where slope creates risk. You realize you are no longer guessing. You are making decisions based on clear evidence. You walk the area once more. You draw an invisible boundary in your mind. You pick the strongest section of land, not the section that looks the most convenient. You understand that convenience leads to failure. You choose the area that gives your work a fighting chance. You end the day with one question. You know the land now. You know what it demands. You ask yourself if this ground can carry the weight of a full season. If the answer is yes, you continue. If the answer is no, you move the boundary until the land finally supports your plan. You settle on the final choice. You stand on soil that can work if treated right. The first real step is complete. Chapter 2. Designing a layout that works under pressure. You return to the ground you chose. The pressure shifts now. You no longer study the land. You shape it. Every decision you make from this point forward becomes permanent once structures go in. You know you cannot waste space. You cannot create bottlenecks. You cannot build a garden that collapses under daily use. You move slow and steady. You start with the shape of the footprint. You walk the perimeter of the area you selected. You picture straight lines and clean angles. You picture curved spaces if the land forces them. You trace the boundary with your boots and mark the corners with small stakes. You do not cut the footprint too tight. Crops need room to expand. Tools need room to turn. Your body needs room to work without strain. You choose a perimeter that respects these realities. You bring out a simple map, even if it is just a rough grid on paper. You sketch the boundary. You add north, south, east, and west. You add the sun path. You add the wind direction you observed before. You add the slope and the drainage patterns. You understand the layout must work with these forces, not against them. You understand that ignoring them will cost you in heat, water, and failed growth. You begin with paths. You keep them wide enough for the way you move. If you carry buckets, you want enough space to walk without hitting crops. If you use a wheelbarrow, you want paths wide enough to turn. You mark main paths at 3 feet. You mark secondary paths at 2 feet. You understand that narrow paths lead to damaged plants and frustration. You stick to the measurements. You think about access. You need a clear line from the garden entrance to the water source. You need a path that allows you to carry heavy bags without stumbling. You need a route that drains well so you are not stepping through mud during wet weeks. You plan paths with straight runs for efficiency and slight curves when the land demands respect. You keep the layout simple and functional. You move to work zones. You designate a corner for tools. You pick a dry, stable area for soil bags, compost bins, and storage. You choose a space wide enough for turning, lifting, and staging materials. You understand that a cramped work zone will slow every task. You plan for a station that handles messy jobs without interfering with crops. You return to the main planting area. You now decide where raised beds might fit and where in-ground rows might sit. You do not build yet. You only place them on the map. You consider sunlight first. Beds holding heat belong in full sun. Rows that risk drying too fast belong where shade covers part of the day. You align long rows north to south for even light exposure. You understand that east-west rows can create uneven growth unless the land forces that orientation. You think about crop rotation. You leave space between future beds and rows so you can shift plant families each year. You avoid locking yourself into a rigid pattern. You leave space where compost can be added or where future expansion might happen. You keep the design flexible without losing structure. You weigh raised beds against in-ground rows. You list the strengths and weaknesses. You start with raised beds. They give control over soil. They warm faster in early spring. They drain well when the land holds too much water. They keep weeds lower. They organize space neatly. They cost money and labor to build. They dry out quicker in hot months. They require solid materials. You shift to in-ground rows. They cost nothing to form. They allow roots to travel deeper. They stay cooler during hot spells. They hold moisture longer. They demand more soil improvement. They reveal every drainage issue you missed. They can erode if slope is too steep. They require more management to keep weeds under control. You study the land with these comparisons in mind. You return to your sketch. You place raised beds in areas where drainage is weak or the soil needs strict control. You place in-ground rows where deep soil structure is strong and slope helps water move evenly. You keep both systems an option. You do not commit to one until Chapter 3, but the thinking begins here. You shift your attention to traffic flow. You stand in the center of the map and imagine your daily movements. You walk from the entrance to the tool station. You walk from the tool station to the main beds. You walk from the beds to the compost area. You walk from the compost area to the water source. You imagine doing this in heat, in cold, in rain, and during long days when the work piles up. You design paths that cut waste and fight fatigue. You return to drainage again because layout must support it. You follow the slope lines you marked earlier. You avoid putting beds or rows directly in runoff paths. You keep structures away from areas where water collects. You allow paths to guide water safely away. You build gentle grading into the layout by marking areas that will need leveling later. You understand that a poor drainage plan creates silent failures that appear weeks later. You check wind exposure next. You do not want tall structures blocking sun where it is needed. You do not want lightweight materials catching wind and shifting. You place raised beds where walls or fences provide some wind buffering. You keep sensitive plants in areas where wind breaks can be added without reshaping the entire footprint. You think ahead to support structures like trellises. You leave them space so they do not collapse under strong gusts. You finalize the map one line at a time. You check each decision against the ground reality. You walk the area again to see if the map holds up. You adjust path placement. You adjust the width of the main access lane. You shift a potential bed west by a few inches to avoid a shadow line. You move an in-ground row away from an area where water drains too fast. You make the design fit the land, not the other way around. You step back once more. You check for bottlenecks. You remove tight corners. You increase path width where your torso would rub against crops. You widen tool stations. You add turning space at path intersections. You shape the layout for long-term use, not a single season. You finish the day with the full map in hand. You now have a layout that follows the land, respects the forces around it, and gives you room to work without constant frustration. You know the real pressure comes next. Planning is clean, building is not. Chapter 3, Building the System, Raised Beds and In-Ground Setup. You return to the layout you designed. The planning is over. Now the build begins. You feel the weight of the decisions you made in earlier steps. Everything becomes real once material hits the ground. You start with raised beds because they demand structure, stability, and precision. You need straight lines, level corners, safe edges, and materials that can survive weather, weight, and time. You lay out the footprint of the first raised bed using stakes and a tight string line. You measure both diagonals so the rectangle stays true. You know this step matters because a crooked frame twists under soil pressure. You choose lumber or blocks rated for outdoor exposure. You avoid boards treated with chemicals not safe for food growing spaces. You check each piece for cracks. You avoid weak points because pressure will exploit them. You place the boards on the ground and check the soil beneath them. You remove small stones. You cut down high spots. You fill low spots. You do not rush leveling. A raised bed must rest evenly or the frame will shift with every watering. You adjust until all corners sit flat. You tighten screws or drive exterior rated fasteners. You check each joint for stability by pulling lightly against it. You ensure the frame does not move. You step back and look at the frame sitting on raw ground. You check the slope again. You confirm water will drain away from, not toward, the bed. You check how the wind hits the structure. You check sun exposure. You make final adjustments now because they will be impossible once the bed is filled. You move to anchoring. You drive stakes inside the corners and along long sides to prevent outward bowing when soil weight increases. You hammer each stake down until it sits flush against the inside wall. You attach them with screws. You feel the frame tighten and settle. You know the structure is ready for soil. You bring in soil next. You do not shovel random dirt into the frame. You build a controlled mix that matches your climate and crops. You lay a thin layer of coarse material at the bottom where drainage is poor. You place the soil mix in stages. You break clumps with your hands. You check moisture by squeezing the soil lightly. You test if it crumbles instead of forming a wet lump. You understand that soil texture determines root health, water retention, and long-term stability. You fill until the soil reaches a height that leaves room for watering without overflow. You smooth the top with a rake. You apply gentle downward pressure with your palm to test compaction. You do not pack it tight. You leave air pockets for roots. You water the soil slightly to settle it. You watch for dips that reveal uneven fill. You add material where needed. You complete your first raised bed and move to the next one. You repeat the process. You maintain precision. You do not assume the second bed will be easier. You know every frame carries its own challenges in slope, wind, and soil movement. You build each bed with the same discipline because failure in one becomes failure in the system. You step away from the raised beds once they stand ready. You shift to the in-ground rows. This system follows different rules. The ground carries the weight. The soil structure below the surface decides root depth and moisture retention. You start by marking straight rows with a taut string. You keep spacing consistent. You give yourself enough room to walk without stepping on planting areas. You break the top layer of soil with a garden fork. You push it straight in and lean back to lift compacted earth. You do not flip the soil. You loosen it. You increase airflow without disturbing deeper layers. You repeat this along the full length of the row. You remove stones and debris. You check for roots from nearby trees. You smooth the surface with a rake. You create raised mounds or flat rows depending on water conditions. If your land drains slow, you lift the row slightly above ground level to keep roots from drowning. If your land drains fast, you leave the surface flat so moisture holds longer. You shape the edges clean so water runs evenly. You press lightly on the sides to prevent collapse. You add soil improvements if needed. You spread compost across the top and work it in with a fork. You move slow to avoid compacting the row. You mix until color and texture look uniform. You break clumps until the soil feels loose. You test by pushing your fingers into the ground. You check for clean penetration. You check for resistance. You keep adjusting. You finish shaping the in-ground rows and begin leveling checks. You place a straight board across the row and set a small level on top. You check if one side drops. You adjust by moving soil until the bubble centers. You repeat this down the full length. You know a level row sends water evenly along its surface. Uneven rows create dry pockets and drowned sections. You prevent failure now. You test compaction by stepping lightly between rows. You avoid stepping on the rows themselves. You press soil along the edges to firm them without crushing the structure. You run your hand across the surface to feel for weak spots. You make adjustments as needed. You move to watering tests. You pour clean water at the top of one row. You watch how it travels. You watch how fast the soil absorbs it. You check if it runs to the sides or stays centered. You identify areas where water pools. You correct them by reshaping the soil. You repeat the test until you trust the system. You perform the same test in the raised beds. You water one corner lightly. You watch how the moisture spreads. You check for fast runoff. You check for slow absorption. You adjust the mix if needed. You add small amounts of coarse material to improve drainage or richer soil to improve moisture retention. You keep refining until both systems respond with control and predictability. You finish construction and soil preparation. You stand back and look at the garden. It no longer exists only on paper. It sits in the real world with edges, corners, rows, and defined space. You touch the soil. You feel the weight of the work behind you. You feel the season ahead pressing against your shoulders. You know the garden will test you with heat, water, pests, and time. You also know it has a foundation that will not fail easily. You walk each path once more. You check your tool zone. You check your storage area. You check your row spacing. You check the raised beds for any shift or lean. You add screws where needed. You correct soil where it sagged. You remove debris that settled during construction. You move slow and methodical. You end with a final question. You know the system is built. You know it can hold. But construction is only part of the season. The real pressure comes with the first planting. The land will decide if your work was enough.